Come to the king. Praja, the citizens. Translation. Thus being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sujumna regains his desired maleness every alternate month, and in this way he ruled the kingdom, although the citizens were not satisfied with this. Purport by His Divine Grace, Shivakanta Swami Shiva Bhagavata. The citizens could understand that the king was transformed into a female every alternate month, and therefore could not discharge his royal duty. Consequently, they were not very satisfied. Om Magadata Namandasya Ganajana Shilakaya Chakshanabhuni Kaminata Swashri. The many changes and paradigm shifts in the life of King Sujumna are continuing in this chapter. His parents desiring a son, but receiving instead a daughter, requested their guru, who fulfilled their desire by transforming him, her, into a boy, who then was transformed again into a female by Lord Shiva's desire to protect and please his wife Parvati, and then to fulfill King Sujumna's desire, he was again awarded the identity of a male every other month. But this was not satisfying to the subjects in his kingdom. And we sometimes experience that having a female ruler can help us in our surrender to Krishna. Because as Lalita Devi told Srimati, what she'd heard that Madha Mangal told Krishna, you know, Krishna, girls don't have the ability to decipher objective reality from subjective feelings. It's not their prominent trait. And this can be a challenge in ruling a kingdom for the subjects. In the past few days, discussions on how to deal with someone, because we find even in our movement devotees with such an identity crisis that, you know, sometimes we have a man who thinks he's a woman or vice versa, or one gender having an operation to change into the other. It doesn't change the mentality. And it can potentially create a lot of disturbance. It tends to keep everyone awake in Srimad Bhagavatam class when you discuss topics like what does it mean to be a male or what does it mean to be a female. Because apparently people spend a lot of time in trying to understand this. Matajis seem to have the ability to discuss it quite freely, whereas men seem to have a code of silence about this topic. As both genders struggle to adjust their role in a world that is undergoing the most unnatural pace in types of changes. And the current notion seems to be prevailing, at least from what I've heard, that male and female are like different species from different planets that are not really very likely to arrive at any kind of compatible relationships. And there's adequate empiric evidence to support this theory. And therefore, if we want to remain hopeful, we have to see through the eyes of Scripture. Because with vision contaminated by material desires, we cannot see the soul, we cannot see Krishna. Bhagavad Gita describes the soul as 1/10,000th the size of a hair in size. But how can you actually measure the soul? What is the soul? It is a particle of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, part and parcel of Krishna. How could you measure? But the real point is, how could you see, even if you had a sufficiently powerful microscope? You can only see the soul and the super soul within the heart of any person through the eyes of Scripture. And this understanding necessitates a worthy response. Since every living entity, whatever their species of life, carries a portion of Krishna, the jiva, the eternal servant of Krishna, as well as the paramatma within their heart, it is an offense to disrespect or mistreat, either actively or passively through neglect, any living entity. So what does it mean to be male and female? They have quite different roles. And these different natures reflect the different aspects of the soul, which are designed by Krishna to interact in a complementary manner. And we see that the joining together of opposites in a spirit of unity sparks new life. And when the whole, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, when the whole is present in the consciousness of any participant in the act of creation, procreation, recreation, within that service, we can decipher our own role in the dynamics of evolution. And conversely, if we succumb to the conditioning which focuses on the superficial dimensions of sex, and thus deny a relationship with another as a whole person, whether that other be offspring or spouse, if we deny that they are a whole person due to focusing on the superficials, we thereby drive a wedge between the male and female components of our own being. And this divides the consciousness and undermines the integrity of the person and compartmentalizes the different aspects of the soul. And thus we find those components which are meant to work together towards synergy, harmony, and integrity, when they become divided, then there's a split, a disconnect between the conscious and subconscious, between the head and the heart, between the soul and the body, between man and woman, between God above and earth below, between Bhumi and Dharma. And when life becomes compartmentalized, it shifts from the synergy for which Krishna designed the creation, in which everyone is encouraging, inspiring, assisting, and uplifting one another. Ultimately, by always conversing about Krishna and enlightening one another about Him, it shifts into a syndrome when we deny our role in Krishna's plan. So, the communion that we so deeply long for requires compassion, feeling with others, which includes the empathy to enter in to the feelings of another. One problem is that we're so terrified of deepening our own pain that we shield ourselves against entering in to the story of another, and thereby sentence ourselves to alienation and isolation. The empowerment to enter in to the anguish of another, to reach to their level, to help them and uplift them, is born of understanding that we are not required to be the compassionate one. We are servants of the compassionate one. Srila Prabhupada was the first person in probably all our lives who really gave us a sense of caring and loving. Because he's the ambassador, the messenger of Krishna's love. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the Simha Guru, who had a reputation of being so fierce in debate, as was Nimai Pandit in his professor days in Nadia, that any professor or pundit with any contending theory would go way out of their way to avoid meeting them. But a Vaishnava, we know, though hard as the thunderbolt, is also soft as a rose. These are the balanced traits of the male and female components of the soul. So in expressing compassion, Vaishnavas preach. And to make the preaching effective globally and continually over time, starting from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who envisioned Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, began an institution which Srila Prabhupada established as ISKCON. With all the headaches involved in being part of an institution, it is an essential austerity for the scope and duration of preaching. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati dispatched some of his disciples to a remote region where no one had ever preached before in recent times, and with great struggle, beginning with no money and no men, but with faith in the words of their Guru Maharaj, they eventually developed a congregation, and the preaching began flourishing. Being very inspired by this news, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave instructions to those devotees that at an auspicious upcoming date, they should have a temple constructed and install deities. So the devotees worked very fervently, very enthusiastically to meet that deadline, working day and night so hard. In the course of the marathon, there was an unfortunate event. One brahmachari was found acting inappropriately with a neighbor, Mataji. And some of his senior disciples, his senior godbrothers, chastised him and rebuked him very severely. And it was actually more than he could take. And the next morning he was gone. And they went out and looked for him, but couldn't find him. And they considered, well, Guru Maharaj is coming for the installation, and there's so much work to do that they just threw themselves back into the fervor of the marathon. And had everything ready at the time that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati arrived for the commemoration of the temple and installation of the deities. And he was visibly very pleased by what his disciples had accomplished. And he expressed to them that fact, that you have accomplished so much yet. And there was thousands of congregational members attending, beautiful deities awaiting installation, great dignitaries and VIPs, beautiful flower decorations, massive quantities of prasadam awaiting distribution, beautiful Harinam Sankirtan resounding through the atmosphere, and everyone was extremely blissful. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was looking around and he asked, where is that particular brahmachari? Amidst all this accomplishment, he noticed one missing element that became the focus of his attention. And the leading devotees said that maybe we were a little too harsh on him. And he left. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati became very sad. And he spoke. He said, all your achievements, this beautiful temple, this vast congregation, this potent preaching, these beautiful deities, these buildings, are not